Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Human Technology Podcast. My little Christmas and CES break is over, and I'm back for you with a couple of new episodes, and the next ones will be on the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, that ran early January in Las Vegas, Nevada. And there is so much stuff, there is so much new things we can talk about, that I decided to make four episodes about the CES. And the first one is this one here today. So let's start with a, let's say, general view on the show. CES 2026 is history, but in a way it is not really over yet. For me, here comes the analysis phase. What happened? What conclusions do I draw from it? What's going to happen next? So all the things afterwards. And I will let you know with the episodes here in the Human Technology Podcast. It was, as usual, four intense days at Las Vegas at 63 kilometers, almost 40 miles on foot across the Las Vegas Convention Center. 21 scheduled meetings, about roughly the same number of spontaneous conversations in hallways, at booths, on shuttle buses. So extremely intense exchange. And yeah, I had about 10 rides on the CES shuttle buses. I realize more and more how efficient that is. The CTA, Consumers Technology Association, the organization that runs the CES, is optimizing the entire show from year to year. And the shuttle buses were even better than all the years before. They were on time. They avoided traffic jams. So that was a pretty cool thing, pretty cool move they did. Plus the fact that the convention center itself, the main entrance, was rebuilt. And that in combination with the closure of the entire central plaza for public traffic was a great improvement, big improvement towards a more efficient, more easier, better way of moving into the show, out of the show, and on the show. Beyond that, I used the Las Vegas monorail about 10, 12, 15 times. Also an efficient means of transport during the CES in Las Vegas that runs parallel to the strip. And yeah, it's a pretty efficient way of moving around. Until now, I'm still a bit overwhelmed, which usually is a good sign. Of course, I ran through all the information I had. I wrote a report. So, a little spoiler here. If you do not have your copy of my report, send me a message, email, LinkedIn direct message, whatever channel you may want to use. And in return, you will get your free copy of my CES 2026 report. report. The CES, as always, compressed the future of technology into a few exhausting and aspiring days. It did not disappoint. The show did not disappoint me when it comes to showing where technology is heading and, for me, more importantly, how our relationship with technology is changing. CES 2026 was big, even by CES standards. More than 4,100 exhibitors, 2.6 million square feet, about 260,000 square meters of exhibition space at the Las Vegas Convention Center and in the Venetian. About 1,200 startups brought fresh ideas into the picture, 148,000 attendees from all over the world. That included 6,900 media representatives and content creators and analysts. I don't know whether I fall into this category. I don't know how they count that, but those are the figures the CTA published on the CES this year. This row of podcast episodes is my attempt to take a step back from all the noise, the miles I walked, the caffeine I had, and I want to make sense out of what I saw, and I want to make that available to you. This will neither be a product catalog or a hype-driven trend list. Instead, I want to reflect on patterns, absences, contradictions, signals, especially around automotive HMI, around mobility, in general about HMI and artificial intelligence, and on our constantly changing relationship with technology. So you will hear my structured reflection on all what this might be. And since I have written the report and now prepared the podcast episodes, still a couple of open questions remain, but basically I think I have a picture. Otherwise I wouldn't sit here and talk about this. As I said, I have planned 4 episodes. Today it's about the show in general. The next one will be about automotive HMI technologies, products, threats. Then the episode after will be non-automotive. And the final episode I plan is talking about all the open questions that are brought back with me. So today I will talk about exhibitors. What changed? What is new? What draw my attention? Number 2, my highlights of the show. I will mention them just shortly here. I will have them in the next or the one after episode. Lots more in detail. Where there's sun, there's also shade. So my lowlights of the show. And I have decided to add my personal creepiest moment of the show. Finally, number 5 is what I was missing during the show. What are things that I feel should have been more in the focus, but were not? So let's start with who was there, who wasn't. First of all, an analysis on the shift among automotive exhibitors. So at first look, the exhibitors at the CES were the familiar usual suspects. Particularly the central hall was dominated by these big companies, globally established technology, electronic companies, companies that have shaped the CES for many years, like LG, Panasonic, Bosch, Samsung. They were there and they once again had a strong presence, sometimes in the same locations as usual. Samsung was somehow distributed in front of the hall. But Many familiar things. The booths covered a strong, broad spectrum from displays to sensors, artificial intelligence, smart environments, smart homes, platform technologies, and these companies seem to be some like the backbone of CES, the very traditional part, because they have consumer products. They do TVs, they do ovens, they do refrigerators. They do all things that we have in our homes and that are the traditional consumer electronics. In addition, major digital and platform players as Amazon reinforced the impression that CES is increasingly shaped by software ecosystems, by cloud services, artificial intelligence, business models, far more than it is shaped by hardware. On the automotive area, mapping, navigation, location intelligence were represented by, for example, here, or TomTom, while industrial technology and automation were covered by players such as, for example, Siemens. And Siemens has multiple locations. One was in the automotive hall. I had not been aware that they are so super strong in automotive, software-defined vehicles, but also in the North Hall, where they were more on the industrial side. Consumer-facing mobility navigation solutions were showcased, for example, by Garmin. They also have the same location, the same kind of booth, with different exhibits every year when I'm there. Beyond the established tech giants, two additional exhibitor groups stood out to me because of their visibility. First, there was a remarkably high number of two-wheeler manufacturers, electric motorcycles, scooters, e-bikes, and the second one was focusing on micromobility, including shared mobility platforms, lightweight urban transportation solutions, but also pretty nonsense stuff, and I will talk about this in one of the next episodes, like board cases you can sit on and be driven through airports. Now, of course, there are long hallways in airports, and having something to sit on and being driven seems to be attractive, but I don't know whether this makes really sense. All in all, this represents a broader shift in mobility narratives at the CES, away from a car-centric perspective towards more a diverse, more urban, more flexible mobility concept. And finally, a wide range of technology-focused companies, from AI startups, sensor specialists, software platform providers, they rounded out the exhibitor landscape. Their presence underscored CES's role as a technology-first event where mobility is increasingly discussed as an application layer built on digital, data-driven, and an AI-enabled foundations. The show remains a strong and relevant platform for global technology companies, digital ecosystems, emerging mobility concepts. The show floor was rich in innovation, especially in areas adjacent to mobility. At the same time, the composition also lays the groundwork for a more critical discussion about which players were not present, and what that absence might signal for the evolving relationships between CES and the automotive industry. CES positions itself as a central global platform for innovation in artificial intelligence, in connectivity, autonomy, and software-defined systems, including software-defined vehicles. The presence of traditional automakers was extremely limited, very different from what we saw a few years ago. So Mercedes used to have a clear presence. Audi, Toyota, Fiat, Stellantis, back then called PSA, all of these automakers did not show up this year. Well, Fiat, Dodge, and Jeep presented e-bikes. Bugatti presented scooters. Pretty weird, pretty strange stuff. Of the established Western automotive brands, BMW was the only OEM with a clear and official presence. BMW has long used the CES as a stage to discuss future-oriented topics as digital user experience, in-car interaction concepts, and the general broader transformation of the car into a software-driven product. In that sense, their participation was consistent with previous years, although the booth at the usual location on the Central Plaza was not as exciting, eccentric, artsy as in some earlier years. But they had a very good coffee, they had some snacks and some water, so it is always a good thing to go into the booth, sit down there, relax a bit, stretch your legs a bit, and then get a good coffee and a bite, and then you can continue refreshed. That worked this year, and it was outstanding because Audi was missing, BMW was missing, Mercedes was missing, Toyota was missing. They were all not present. The other OEMs, even from Japan and Korea, were more or less absent from the show floor. That was totally different to the past years, where the big brands used the CES to communicate their visions of autonomous driving, connected vehicles, software innovations, digital cockpit. Yeah, so some of them were there with a keynote or with off-site meetings, but not in the show halls. And this absence was not subtle. It was clearly noticeable. It was obvious. From China, the representation was similarly selective. Geely, Great Wall Motors appeared as automotive OEMs exhibitors. All the others did not. And they presented themselves more as technology companies rather than vehicle producers. Beyond that, it is worth noting that Hyundai had a pretty big booth in the West Hall of the Convention Center, but not as a classical automotive OEM, but showcasing robotics, future automation concepts, underlining the company's broader ambition to position itself as a provider of mobility and robotics rather than a car maker. So, taking the overall picture, it is hard to ignore that the traditional heavyweights of the automotive industry were largely absent from what was one of the most important technology events in the world. And it still is. The CES is still, from my point of view, the most important technology event we have. And this absence is particularly remarkable because many of the core themes dominating CES, AI, data-driven services, user experience, automation, software architectures, they are now at the heart of modern vehicle development. And so, strange thing, maybe it is all based on budget restrictions they have at the OEMs. Maybe it is all about that they don't know where their future is and if they have any future at all. There is a very high uncertainty in the automotive industry. So this is definitely reflected by who was there and who was not. Pretty much the same thing for the automotive suppliers. They were also selected in an also present in a very selective way. So companies like Omovio, the former Continental, Aptiv and NXP, they were there with comparably large tents on the Central Plaza and used the CES to position themselves all around software platforms, AI strategies, next generation vehicle architectures. And this was a positive example that suppliers are increasingly moving into the roles that were at least partially associated with OEMs in the past. I have seen that there was a swing between OEMs and Tier 1s from year to year. Who is the more important, more innovative part of the industry? Some years I had the impression the automotive OEMs are more innovative, and then a year later, what was the first years? And in the past year, it seems to be more the technology companies. So there was no fair comparison this year because the OEMs were hardly there, and only a very selected number of first-tier suppliers were there. Missing were companies like Forvia, like ZF, like Magna. They were not represented on the show floor. Particularly, the absence of Forvia was, for me personally, pretty painful because I always liked their booth that was packed with innovation, that was highly exciting and showing things, were innovative but realistic. Let's put it this way. This year, they simply did not show up. And that raises fundamental questions. Is the CEA losing its relevance as a platform for traditional automakers and first tiers? Are OEMs shifting their innovation storytelling to proprietary events, investor-focused formats, or maybe venues closer to home? Or, and this is what I believe, does this signal a deeper uncertainty about how to credibly present automotive innovation in an environment increasingly shaped by fast-moving digital and AI-centric industries? Well, definite answers may vary by company and region. One conclusion is clear: the relationship between CES and the traditional automotive OEMs landscape is changing. The CES remains a strong show in technology, but the role as the one number one central stage for global automotive companies, OEMs, cars, is no longer granted. Let's move on to my three personal highlights. So every CES offers a wide variety of technologies, showcases, and gadgets, and some of them puzzle me, some of them don't touch me at all, some are totally exciting. And my three favorites, the first one, and I will just mention them here quickly. I will go into each of these companies and technologies in one of the next episodes of the Human Technology Podcast. So first, SoundHound. They showed an agentic AI voice interaction technology. I had a demonstration on the booth, and the guy said, "Yeah, I have this squeaky noise on my brakes, and what is that?" And then a dialogue started, saying, "Okay, this may be your brakes, and you should go to the garage, and I have made an appointment. And once you make the appointment, do you want to test drive the latest vehicles of the car company?" And so on and so on and so on. So it was an advanced conversational voice system that creates context and maintains context. It even processes complex multi-step intents, and it proactively supports user. TomTom is using this technology in their navigation systems, their navigation HMIs, and I had a demonstration on the TomTom booth and of the same technology, and that guy said, "Yeah, I am in Las Vegas and I want to drive to Los Angeles, And halfway down the road, I want to have a excellent Mexican lunch. Can you please make a reservation at the best Mexican restaurants halfway between Las Vegas and Los Angeles? And by the way, there should be a electric charger close by. And trying to make this with a touch base, with an haptic, with a visual HMI, that would be pretty much of an effort. But just saying that and having the agentic AI voice recognition doing all the things for you, making a reservation at a restaurant, making a reservation at the charger, finding the right place, and so on and so on and so on, that was extremely impressive. So number one for me, SoundHound and their voice interaction. Second one that impressed me was NXP. They showed a chipset for in-cabin sensing. So NXP is not a producer of devices. They're not building any. They're not a first tier. They're a classical second tier. They bring their technology to the first tiers, and they make the systems that then go into the cars of the OEM. And basically a chip producer. And they presented a sensor fusion based interior sensing, combining radar, smartwatch, intelligent data interpretation to understand the occupant presence, to understand posture, status of the person, physical and psychological status, the intent, the intention. Yeah? Is a person attentive or not? With that, you can directly enable safer, more comfortable, and more adaptive in-cabin experiences. And the third highlight was the Alps Alpine. HMI technology is not only automotive, but also automotive. They had a broad portfolio there. One was a touchless touchscreen, meaning that you can use this touchscreen without touching the glass surface, but with gestures, which is very good if you have hygienic restrictions like in emergency rooms or in hospitals. And for example, ticketing machines. Yeah, and the other one was a hat with an infrared sensor that allows, with an actuator on the inside of the hat, that vibrates so that blind people get a clear indication of obstacles that they're heading for. So those were the three ones, the SoundHound, the NXP, and the Alps Alpine HMI technologies. As I said, I will go into each of them in one of the next episodes. My biggest disappointments, despite the overall scale and the technological breadth of the exhibits, a few aspects were disappointing. As I said already, the low number of automotive OEMs and first-tier suppliers was impossible to ignore. It was a very selective presence of first-tiers. It was almost complete absence of traditional automakers, which disappointed me. Also, there was a general lack of, let's say, disruptive automotive trends, maybe due to the missing OEMs. Many technologies were impressive on a technical level, but only a few translated into exciting new narratives for the future of the vehicle. Of the driver-vehicle interaction. So radical new concepts, innovative UX visions, paradigm shifting were largely absent. And compared to previous years, this CES felt less like a place where the future of the automotive industry, of the car, is actively shaped. It was more like a technology marketplace where automotive relevance has to be recreated rather than experienced. So the disappointment was not rooted in what CES had lacked technology, but in what it failed to articulate for the automotive domain. A clear, sparing, forward-looking vision of where the industry is heading. Let's move on to my creepiest moment. The large parts of the North Hall were occupied by humanoid robots. Exciting stuff, and I will talk about this probably in the episode after the next. But these humanoid robots created for me one of the most memorable but also unsettling moments of the CES. On a technical level, the systems were absolutely impressive. The demonstrations range from folding laundry, playing table tennis, performing to Tai Chi, showcasing remarkable advances in motion control and perception and in embodied intelligence. What made this moment creepy, however, was not the robot's functional capability, but the attempt to humanize them. Many of the exhibitors try to make their machines look and behave as humans, as human-like as possible. From a hat or a scarf these robots were wearing, down to silicone skins pulled over their faces, trying to mimic human faces. And at that point, the technical fascination turned into discomfort. This is the so-called uncanny valley. When you have an object that is obviously a machine and that tries to behave like a human, we feel unwell. So we are very emotional, and we are very direct in perception of facial expressions, of physical expressions, of how people move. And if you have a robot, it's a robot, and it's absolutely okay. If it's visible, it's a robot. But if these robot makers want to make the robots look like humans, and we see that there is a discrepancy between the appearance of it, it looks like a human, and the behavior, it behaves like a machine, that is uncanny valley. That makes us feel creepy. And for me, this raises the question that goes beyond robots engineering. Do we need artificial humans? Is andromorphism the right design direction for robots meant to coexist and collaborate with us? And of course, if we work in mixed environments, like for example here in my kitchen, if I have a robot that shall support me in cooking and cleaning, and then of course it makes it easier because the environment, the hardware is already existing, that has some kind of human shape. On the other side, the robots we have in our homes, that sweeping our floors or mowing our lawns, they do not look like humans at all. They look like a vacuum cleaner without tubes, which they are actually. And that's absolutely okay. So anyway, is this really the right direction we're walking in, or are we going the wrong way here? Would it be more transparent and then at the end less creepy to design robots as clearly artificial machines rather than as visual and behavioral imitators of ourselves? Big question. And for me, this is the biggest question that I have at the moment. And I will think about this and will probably make a separate episode on this one. What I was missing, finally, but what CES, from my point of view, did not talk about. CES 2026 was characterized by several notable absences. These blind spots are not shortcomings of the classical sense, But they reveal where the industry is currently hesitant, uncertain, simply not ready to engage in a deeper reflection. While artificial intelligence, autonomy, intelligent systems were ubiquitous, ethical considerations were largely limited to abstract statements about safety and compliance. Questions around responsibility, long-term societal impact, transparency of decision-making, and human agency were rarely addressed in a, let's say, concrete or design-driven manner. Ethics felt more like a regulatory checkbox than a core component of technology development. Closely related to that was the reflection on the cognitive and psychological impact of the increasingly intelligent HMIs. CES this year showcased impressive interaction technologies, but there was little discussion about long-term effects on attention dependency, skill degradation, or trust, especially in partially automated systems. When we cooperate with a machine, with a smart machine, we have to have the right level of trust. And maybe we lose our skills. We have a loss in competence. And how do we keep the attention alive? So as vehicles and environments become more proactive and agentic, it will be critical to understand how humans adapt to these systems or fail to adapt. And for me, this was not touched on the show floor. And there was surprisingly little critical debate about how human skill erosion, the loss of competence in the context of automation and an AI assistant is met. While convenience and safety gains were emphasized, the question of how much competence should remain with the human and how systems can actively help to retain skills were rarely raised. And I feel that this silence is particularly relevant in mobility, where over-reliance and assistance systems can have real-world safety impacts. So, at the end, CES was rich in technological solutions, but comparably poor in self-reflection. The show demonstrated what is possible, but spent far less time discussing what should be done, what should be avoided, and what responsibilities come with increasing technological power. All right, that's it for today. If you are interested in this, and if you want to get more into detail, and you have not received your copy, your free copy of my CES 2026 report, let me know on any of the channels, by email, by LinkedIn direct message. And in return, you will get your free copy. All the things I've talked about, plus a lot more. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast@beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.